Things change, but we stretch and grow and make room for one another. Our love is a place we can always come back to, and it will be waiting, the same as it ever was. You belong here.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you relevant updates and reviews about the internet's favorite books. Everything you see relentlessly on Book Talk, we read it and we tell you if it's worth making time for. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. So today we are bringing you, you've probably seen this hot pink cover somewhere on your social media or in the bookstore. It is Emily Henry's Happy Place. And Emily Henry has been very popular for beach read book lovers. I believe all of her books now have been picked up for movies. So I'm sure you have seen this somewhere. So we decided to take a read. And Happy Place follows main character Harriet, goes by Harry, as she goes to her happy place in Maine and meets up with her friends at their place they've met every year for this annual lobster fest. And it goes on to, she bumps into her ex-fiance who is there, and it turns into the typical second chance romance, forced proximity, fake dating sort of rom-com, but isn't actually that funny. They say funny things, but they talk about really deep life stuff. It's about growing up, found family, transitioning friendships to adulthood, finding where you belong in the world. Yeah.
There you go. Good summary. Who wants to read the review first?
I'll jump in.
You better start with one of your five.
Yeah, okay. Catherine, you go, then I'll read all of mine.
Yes. Mine's also a one sentence one, so it will be very quick and we can transition. So this is a one star on Goodreads. Miss Henry, can you explain how Shoddy is going to pay off those loans?
I saw that one and I almost added it to my stash. I took it off last minute.
That was so what I was thinking during that. I was like, can you explain?
I was literally thinking that also. I was like,
I was too. Oh my gosh.
Internal screaming.
We're all way too responsible for this main character. For context, the main character makes some choices about her future that are very financially stressful. Okay. Well, now I'll get to my reviews. I have like a billion, but they're all funny. Okay. Two stars from Kim. There is no happy in this place.
Man, I sort of said that.
Yeah, you did. One star from Mariana. This book was my dark place. Let it be known, PSA to authors, if you make the title of your book Happy Place and people don't like it, there's going to be lots of play off that. Two stars, bro, no offense, but this book made me glad I was single, lol. And this was my last one. Two stars, if I wanted to deal with two immature adults who don't know how to communicate, I'd have dinner with my parents.
Savage. Oh dear. Okay.
I'm done now.
Okay. Well, guys, I'm going to bring you the only serious review, apparently. This is a 5-star review from M, the author, on Storygraph. It's 3 a.m. and I'm not even 100% sure why I'm crying. This book just turned my soul inside out. It's the first one I read that's not strictly coming of age, and yet it perfectly encapsulates the tragic discovery of growing up, the intense happy sad emotions of loss and gain that accompanies getting older and being forced to figure out life for yourself. I'm gutted but infinitely better for having read this one.
Aww.
Yeah, that was serious.
Well,
okay. You go.
Despite me and Catherine picking reviews that kind of make fun of this book, the overall Goodreads rating is 4.2 out of 5, and the Amazon rating is 4.3 out of 5. So very well loved. Again, probably the most popular book of a very popular author. Where do you guys come down with your quality rating?
Words are hard.
That's why we're not authors.
Yeah. That's why we do stuff you can edit.
I went last, so I'll go first. I gave it a solid 4 stars. I kind of agreed with my review. Like, it kind of gut punched you in a lot of really like adult transition feelings. And I thought the characters were pretty well fleshed out. And I loved even like the side characters. I just will never get over problems that could have been solved in the first pages if the characters had just spoken to each other like adults. And I know that's the rom-com esque of it, but it was driving me bonkers.
Yeah. No, literally, that's my exact thoughts of just like, if you had just talked to one another during your like 8-year relationship, maybe you wouldn't be in this position, but okay. I was a little less friendly towards it. I gave it a 3-star rating. And in my Goodreads review, I said I was closer to 3.5 because I could see the goal of the book, but the main romance tropes that the author uses are just not ones I like, period. So it was already getting docked for like the second chance romance kind of thing and like fake dating. Mm-hmm. I only really like fake dating if it's
ma'am, love hypothesis is on the phone.
Yes, but I only like it fake dating when it's not second chance romance. That's the one that gets me. I really don't love when people are like, we broke up and we still love each other. And it's sad. And we're just staring at each other and like, oh my God, he's dating other people. Oh my God, she's dating other people. Like, I hate the miscommunication of that.
Well, yeah. We've been broken up for 5 months, but aren't telling our friends or family. Excuse me.
Yes. Oh my God. That part made me want to throw the book across.
And that's not a spoiler. That's at the beginning. And you're just kind of like, what the hell? Yeah. You asked for this.
Yeah. That's like on the book cover. I felt the same. So my rating, I'm sorry, Catherine, are you done? Did I just totally derail you with that love hypothesis comment?
No, you're good.
I gave it a 3.5 stars. The parts of the book that I really, really liked were the parts about friendship and sort of being in kind of like a quarter life crisis era. A personal note, I was recently unemployed and have newly gotten a job. So there were parts of like the main characters like doubts about her profession and think and like not being sure anymore that like I related to, and the parts about friendship I thought were really, really well written. We're kind of all in that period of life where we're a few years out of college and having to like work to sort of keep those like early adult friendships alive. That's actually literally why this podcast was even born. The romance kind of made me want to scream, and I'm not sure where I really came down on all of it. So yeah, that was sort of a long-winded way to say I felt the same way about Catherine, I think, where there were points I really liked, but like the main romance kind of frustrated me.
Yeah. And I feel like it's marketed as a romance novel. So if you're going to make it a romance novel, the main romance has to be something I'm actually interested in.
Well, it's marketed as rom-com. And yeah, the situation's funny, but they say, okay, the characters say some really funny shit sometimes, like they're witty characters, but the like whole thing is actually not funny.
Yeah, there's no calm in this rom.
It kind of hits on your quarter life crisis depression.
And the rom is ick.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into our discussion questions. I'm kind of surprised that all of our ratings are so close together. But is this book more plot or character driven?
Character?
Yeah.
I feel like they wouldn't be in that situation if they weren't like themselves, you know, like the fact that they've chosen to avoid conflict and not tell people and continue avoiding conflict by torturing themselves. Like, that's a character decision, I feel like.
Yeah.
There's not really a plot other than like forced proximity is the plot. So I agree. Catherine's rolling her eyes.
I just hate the one bed second chance romance thing. That just pissed me off throughout the entire book, which is most of the book. So that's just not going to hit me very well. But yeah, it's more character driven. They made their own decisions, which forced them to have a blowout.
Okay. I have not read any other Emily Henry books. Book Lovers has been on my shelf for months and I just haven't got around to it. Have you guys read any of her books?
I haven't. I was very skeptical that I'd like Emily Henry. I think she kind of leans into the cheesy rom-com aesthetic, even if the books aren't necessarily total rom-coms. And I feel like that's just kind of stuff I'm very skeptical, think I won't like. I liked it way more than I expected I would like it. And I would read other books by her. But yeah, I have not at this point.
Yeah, I have read Book Lovers. I actually listened to it on audiobook, which I would recommend. It was a one drive road trip where I listened to it and it ended right when I got to the hotel after the road trip. So it was like perfect timing. I prefer Book Lovers over Happy Place. So I would really recommend that book. I think it hits more of stuff that I like, which is books, enemies to lovers, mm-hmm. and like idyllic towns and like family. So there's a very huge family aspect to Book Lovers as well, which I really love, any sort of family and the importance of it. So it had a lot of the tropes that I liked. So we'll talk about what Book Lovers has that this book doesn't later, because it's kind of a spoiler. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would recommend that one.
I'll actually say, while I'm normally an enemies to lovers girly, this was a nice break, because I feel like every book we've been reading lately is enemies to lovers, because everybody loves it lately. And I was like filling in, this is like TMI, but we keep a little book log of stuff we read and keep track of tropes and things that we read. And I was filling it in recently and it was like enemies to lovers, enemies to lovers, enemies to lovers, enemies to lovers. I was like, okay. So I actually didn't mind the break from enemies to lovers, and didn't mind that it was like a mix of second chance, forked proximity, one bed, fake dating kind of thing.
I am not also not a second chance romance girly. I just feel like sometimes I feel like those relationships are problematic and you should stay broken up. I didn't totally feel this way about that book, but I'll say I agree on the enemies to lovers thing. I feel like for a long time it kept being like the POV timeline switching was like every book we're reading. Now I feel like lately it's like every book we read has some sort of enemies to lovers, and I'm like getting a little burnt out on it. Did this book bring me back to life? Not sure.
I didn't say brought me back to life, so it was a nice break.
I could never get enough of enemies to lovers, but like when I say enemies to lovers, I mean like Bad Boy with a Heart of Gold.
Yeah,
not like, you know, actually just, yeah, truly terrible person enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Well,
yes, adversaries to lovers.
Yeah, sure. For me it's just that like the more popular something becomes, the more likely that people are doing it badly. Fair, like, because that's how what became stressful with like the POV timeline switching, is that there were a lot of books that were not doing it very well and doing it when it was unnecessary. How long did the book take you to read?
I think I read it in 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, it maybe wasn't like, I don't know what kept me reading. The emotional draw, the friendships probably, and I had time. So I read it, I think, like Friday, Saturday. And it's fairly well paced and not too long. So I guess I just knocked it out.
Yeah, I think I read it in 2 days. I'm not super sure because my car broke down, which is another thing. So I had some free time where I was trapped in my house, in my apartment. So I just kind of sat down and read. So it could have been one day, but it just felt like a really long day, or it could have been 2 days.
Interesting.
So it definitely lives in the twilight zone. Okay.
Yeah.
I do live in the twilight zone. That's a fact.
It took me like 4 or 5 days to read this book. I didn't think the pacing was bad. It was just every time I put it down, I didn't really feel a strong desire to pick it back up. So I feel like it just went more slowly for me. Also, okay, I do actually have one problem with the pacing. The book is 400 pages long, and the characters are still in their broken up era 80% of the way through the book. So I'm just like, when is the turnaround coming?
That's not a spoiler. You know it's coming, but...
Yeah, it's a romance book, y'all.
It was really hard for me to just read that much heartbreak, personally. It was really fucking sad.
Okay, despite the maybe issues you have with the rom-com elements, pacing, would you watch if it was like a Netflix rom-com production?
Short answer, no. I think the pro of this book was like the super emotional friendships. I don't think that's necessarily like a very exciting movie though, or a TV show. So I think it's kind of a pass for me.
Yeah. I don't know how you would be able to really do this book into a movie. I'm sure they will, because obviously Emily Henry is like super popular in all of her books.
It will be a movie. Yes.
Okay, cool. It just came out too. So that's kind of crazy. I just like with all the time jumps and the weird friendship relationships, lack of plot, I don't know how that really works as a movie.
Well, and I do feel like a lot of the important developments happen within the characters' heads, yeah. Which is hard. But also, you know, they turned To All the Boys I Loved Before into a smash hit. And that was a lot of like in your head kind of stuff. So it's possible it will be a movie. So. I saw a little thing that was like, hey, all three of your books have been picked up for movies. And she was like, yeah, crazy. I was like, shit.
You make a bank.
I will say on that point, I do feel like all the characters in this book grew a lot, which I did appreciate. There was definitely big changes by the end, which made the second chance part easier to stomach, even though I didn't totally fall in love.
Agreed.
Yes.
Okay. Busy girl rating.
I think I'm going to stick with my star rating and go with a 4. Like, I enjoyed it enough. And I think for people our age, we're kind of mid to late 20s, like trying to really be adults now and realizing how hard it is. Like, I just thought it was like a close to home kind of book. And I enjoyed that aspect of it and the adult friendship aspect of it. Like I said, the character said some funny things sometimes. And so overall, I think it was worth reading. I think it hit right in our age range. If you're older, you might think they're stupid, though. I don't know. I'm going to go with a 4, though.
Yeah.
I'll also echo 4. I think it's a pretty quick read, quick pace. And I think, well, it's not like your traditional candy floss rom-com book. Like when you think of a romance book where it's just like super quick, super not deep, like surface level, this has a little bit of depth to it. So that's why I can't really give it a 5 where it's like really easy, quick. But if you're looking for romance, but like with deeper meanings and deeper connections and deeper characters, this would be the book for you.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I feel like me and you are like really on the same page with this book, Catherine. I felt the exact same way about it. Is even though I only gave it a 3.5 star rating, which isn't like out of this world high, I feel like this is one of the first books I've read where the main plot is the romance. And I also felt like there was genuine depth to it. So this is still a book I would recommend. So I am also going to give it a 4 busy girls.
Overall, that's a good busy girl rating. I think that's the first time we've all agreed in a while.
There was another one.
Honestly, they all blur together at this point.
I've done a lot of episodes, y'all.
You sound so hardened in my experience.
I mean, this is crazy. This is episode 50 for us.
I know. We're almost to our year-long episode.
Stay tuned for the end.
Oh, no.
No, I meant of the episode. So we can talk about 1 year. Catherine, you're so depressing.
I thought you meant the end. I was like, oh, God, no, this can't be ending.
And as we discuss this book about post-college friendships, we are ending ours.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
My heart stopped even though I knew you were joking.
Oh my God. Felt it.
I'm like hurt laughing.
Even though we started this podcast to literally keep ourselves in touch, we have abandoned the mission.
y'all, Casey's a wandering soul. Without this podcast, we'd never hear from her again.
Yeah, pretty much.
I am. I'm kind of one of those friends who like falls into a black hole and resurfaces 4 months later.
She's an independent girly. And I'm a bad texter. So Catherine, sorry.
No, I'm a bad texter too. So we're all just fucked.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, that fits the theme of the book. So let's get to the spoiler section.
Yeah. My major critique, why didn't they just start a podcast?
There we go.
They'd be forced to talk out their problems, problem solved.
Well, because yeah, they kept complaining about like how we never talk anymore. We never meet up. And they obviously live cross country from each other, like San Francisco, East Coast. I get it. But you could like, this is the digital age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she was a resident.
Sure. But like, it wasn't just her that was lacking communication.
Oh, I know.
The other one,
when I hated my job, I came home, curled up and died every day. So no one heard from me.
Oh, God. How did we get here? Okay.
Journalism school. Easy answer.
Period. Period. Yep. Yep. If you want to come home from work and curl up and die, Mizzou's J school.
Okay. I'm bringing us back on topic because Lord almighty, have we gone so off topic. If you couldn't tell, this is the spoiler alert section. We're going to discuss. That. Yes. So this is where we're going to discuss our discussion questions that I have spoilers. So please read the book before you get to this section or just spoil it for yourself. But we won't be held
accountable. Spoiler, if they had just spoken and talked to their friends and family, none of this would have had to happen.
Yes, that is the truth.
Communication is key. The end.
Yes, communication is key. The end. Anyway, our first discussion question. The book follows some familiar romance tropes. So there's one bed, fake dating, former lovers, etc. And Caitlin's also mentioned a couple. What do you think about these tropes? Which one was your favorite? Did you like them in this book?
Casey just shook her head. No, she didn't like any of them.
Short answer. The only time I've liked one bed was in A Court of Mist and Fury. So did not like it in this book. Did not like the fake dating, did not like the former lovers. None of the tropes I liked. The only trope I liked was found family, which I almost always like, and it had nothing to do with the romance.
If we're talking rom-com tropes exclusively, because I also love found family, I liked, I'm not saying it worked all the way, but I liked the spin on fake dating. Like, they weren't dating, like, love hypothesis. They were, like, broken up fiancés who had to pretend they were still together. So there were, like, a little more stakes because, like, it wasn't just, like, oh, haha, my friend has a crush on this guy, so I'm pretending to date this other guy. It was, if we tell our friends, our entire happy place and friend group will fall apart kind of stakes. So I don't know. I kind of liked the little twist. It still annoyed the shit out of me.
Yeah. See,
I liked, that's a better way of doing it. But spoiler alert, they already knew they were broken up, except for two of the four of them didn't know. But two of them knew that they were broken up and were trying to get them back together and like trying to force them back into a relationship through this one bed situation. So they didn't even have to fake date because the whole reason why they were fake dating was for the two that already knew, because they were getting married and they didn't want to ruin their marriage. Because they were basing like, oh my God, y'all are icons. Like you're making it work long distance.
Sabrina's a bitch. We'll get back to that later.
Sabrina is a bitch. But yep. That's the thing. It's like they were lying the entire time where they're like, oh yeah, we knew you were broken up because we looked through your phone. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like then you didn't need a fake date in the first place.
No, that did add insult to injury. That really did.
To me, what got me on that trope was I find it hard to believe you could fake date someone you were with for 8 years because of the sheer pain. they were literally both in the throes of heartbreak, and they're just going to see each other again and like sit on each other's laps, kiss, hold hands, touch. I was like, there's no part of me that believes this isn't just jarringly painful, much less like the strain of lying to people you love. I was just like, that was the part of the book that like kind of tripped me up the most. And like going from like to love, I feel like that was like the biggest barrier for me, is I was just like, can 30-year-old adults really not be honest with their friends? Like, and also can 30-year-old adults not just like handle a breakup in a mature way? Like, I did not like.
That's why the wedding was thrown in, to make it where they like didn't want to have the conversation in person. But
I got that it added stakes. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree though. I think that's fair. Let's talk about, so the reason the book is called Happy Place is because Harry really loves her time in this idyllic little town in Maine with her favorite people in the world, her found family at the cottage. And so the book jumps in time between Happy Place, the old memories at the cabin, and meeting Wynn, reality, where they are now in like Dark Place, was like the breakup era. And it kind of titles each of the chapters that way, so you know you're jumping back and forth in time. Did you like the time jumps? Did you like how she labeled them? What were your thoughts on that?
I felt the time jumps were occasionally jarring. In general, I didn't mind them, but there were a few that like kind of caught me sideways. The time jumps are part of what threw off the pacing of the book for me, because you get tons of insight into their relationship. And you like really like, I felt like it was well written, in the sense that like it made me feel that like sense of love and like belonging they got from each other. And I like really felt like they had this whole past. Like it helps you understand the value of the relationship and why it's so hard for them to let go. So I appreciated that. But then it takes so long in the present for them to get to the like reckoning of it that I was like, what is happening? Like, why are they broken up? Like, why can they not put this back together?
Yeah, I also liked the time jumps, especially in the beginning where they were explaining how they met. And like, I think you needed those time jumps in order to get depth on their relationship, because it's an 8-year relationship. Explaining that in like monologue or internal monologue just doesn't work very well. So going back in time allows you to do that. The problems I had with it were they were also talking in reality about the past. So I get where she was trying to like meld the chapters so they flowed cohesively, but there was points where I'm just like, well, we already talked about this. Why do we have to relive this moment again? Kind of thing. And I agree 100% with Casey. I just, yeah, there were moments where it just knocked off the pacing in general.
I think I feel similarly. Like, I would say more than not, I enjoyed them. And more than not, I don't think they disrupted the pacing. And it did make the relationship deeper. And you saw the little tiny things that got them to the situation they were in. It wasn't just like, haha, they broke up and they're here. You know, like, mm-hmm. You understood the nuance of it. And it was a very, like, you could see how it got there, which I appreciated the explanations, and I appreciated the depths of the characters and seeing them go through things outside of the relationship that affected the relationship. And I liked the little labels, kind of a cutesy little way to tell you where you were at and not just like dump you in a new time.
Yeah, I like that it's like a chapter name without like making up random chapter names, because I think chapter names are out of style now. Normally people are just like 1, 2, 3, 4. Those, but I kind of liked books. That. It kind of like that it gave it a subject, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Also, I think we kind of mentioned this in the beginning, but I think this is a good part to kind of just a good like segue into discussing the fact that the whole conflict could have been stopped on page one. This book is just too long for something that could be solved in one conversation. That's my opinion. I just wish that there was something in the relationship between the two main characters that like gave more cause for this like 5 month breakup. I know for me, and like, I don't know how you two feel about this. For me, I was like, I don't even understand why you broke up. Like, I get it. I think
that was the point, was to frustrate you in a rom-com-esque way. But yes, I was frustrated.
I was like, just talk to each other.
Yeah. So there were parts of it I liked, in the sense of, I normally don't like second chance romance and stuff like that, where you got those little nuggets throughout the past, like Caitlin was talking about, where it's like, and this is the moment where we should have known that this was the start of the end, or stuff like that, where it's like, we didn't talk to each other here. So that's where we didn't establish that boundary or establish that conversation. And I could tell from the beginning that they were two people that loved each other, but they didn't know themselves enough to be in a relationship together. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
And I really appreciated when her love interest being diagnosed with depression and talking about that and talking about mental health and how that impacted their relationship, because that stuff really does impact your relationship, and you have to love yourself and work on yourself. And he had zero self-confidence the entire book. It pissed me off at some times where he's just like, I just don't think anyone likes me. I don't deserve this. Or like,
pissed her off too.
It pissed her off too, because like, she obviously sees the value in him, but he's like, I'm poor. I'm from Montana and I'm not smart. And I'm like, you're obviously smart if you got into college, shut up, kind of thing. And I hate, like, that's one of my pet peeves with people, is when they're like so self-deprecating that it hurts yourself. So there were moments where I was just like, you know, y'all just need to talk your shit out with a therapist separately, then maybe together.
Yeah.
Well, and kind of along those lines, like, where you get into the nitty gritty of, his father has passed away, he's unhappy out in California. And she is trying to avoid adding to that by letting him know she's miserable in her job and stuff. And it's like, it's okay, we can push off the wedding, and is trying to be like emotionally available for him and therefore shutting him out of her life. And I was like, honestly, that's something I could see myself doing too. Like,
yeah,
that was a very realistic scenario, is where you're trying to like just shut yourself down so you can be there for the other person, and then the other person interprets it wrong. Like, humans make mistakes. And I really, while some of it took a while to get to that point, but I was like, oh, there it is. I see it, and I see how that's possible.
Yeah. I will say, as someone who lives in Sacramento, y'all are right. San Francisco sucks. It is so depressing. I was like, oh, this is too relatable. I would also have depression if I lived there.
Anyway, on the other side of the country, this book takes place for the most part at their cottage in Maine, and then flashes back to college and time in New York and time in San Francisco. And what did you think of Maine and this cottage during Lobster's Fest being her happy place?
I mean, it's not like, I put cottage in quotation marks in this document, because this is a mansion, essentially. Mansion. Like, it's so, they're so rich. They got a wine.
Three bedrooms though. What?
Three bedrooms, but they have a wine cellar and like bougie shit. Like, very rich, bougie atmosphere. But like, I've never been to Maine, and I've always wanted to go because I feel like it's a cool vibe.
I was planning a trip to Acadia with a friend, and then Catherine and I booked our trip to Patagonia on a whim, and I had no money, so I didn't go.
I can't believe you chose Patagonia over Maine. Wow. Oh,
crazy, right?
But yeah, I haven't been to Maine. I did like the vibes. I feel like there's like East Coast vibes. Half of the East Coast vibes are like big city, big brain, accomplishment, ambition, DC, New York. And then the other half of like the East Coast vibes are like fancy cottage with the fish. And this was very like cottage with the fish. Yeah.
Wicked pizza.
Wicked pizza. I did like all the Maine jokes though. That was cute.
Okay. Well, Caitlin has already mentioned some passionate opinions on this front. What did you guys think of the friend group? Sabrina, Cleo, Kimmy, and Parth.
Sabrina's a high maintenance bitch, but she can't help it. But she shouldn't have forced them together. And Cleo and Kimmy are too nice and Parthet's a pushover. Anyway, this is all friend group dynamics and it was all very real.
Yeah, I agree. They were flawed. It was realistic. I agree. Sabrina is a high maintenance, controlling person who's a little selfish. Cleo is a reclusive, avoidant person who would rather dodge. And the other two are just happy-go-lucky sunshines to the grumpy. But I appreciated it still. I thought it was realistic. The only thing I really hated was that Sabrina and Parth went along with the weekend knowing they were broken up.
I planned it intentionally because of that.
I felt like that was something that was a little cruel, which I don't think they intended it to be cruel, but I think that that is something that in real life would inflict a lot of emotional damage. And I wish that they had just said, like, hey, like, come clean. We know about this. Like, handled it like an actual adult. We brought
you
here
so you can talk like adults. Ready? Go. We're going to force you back together by putting you in the only room in this mansion that has a shared bed.
Exactly. Which would be a much worse book. But that's what I wanted to happen is, like, ideally they would have just been like, hey, can you guys please both come? We want you both here. And, like, maybe this is an attempt to, like, see how the friendship will look like post-breakup. And, like, maybe you can get some closure.
Because then, like, you put into perspective all of Sabrina's comments at the beginning of just, like, I mean, look at y'all. Y'all are the model relationship. If y'all ever broke up, I would break up with mine.
Cool.
It was so messed up. And the fact that she knew they were broken up and was trying to manipulate them into a relationship back together, because that's manipulative. That's not helping. That's manipulation. Right. You can want what's best for your friend. And if you think what's best is getting back together, you tell them that, like, verbatim, like, just say, like, hey, I know you're broken up, but I think y'all can really work through this and be stronger for it. You help your friend, not manipulate them into a relationship. And, like, Parth kind of was just along for the ride. I think they're a good relationship because Sabrina's so high maintenance and controlling. I did not like all of her snotty little comments about, like, you don't let me visit kind of thing. Like, what? Yeah, you always canceling on me and all this stuff. Okay.
I thought Cleo had cancer the whole time.
I did not know what Cleo's deal was. I think she just didn't want to deal with Sabrina. That was my
guess. I was like, she didn't want to visit. She's looking skinny. She's not drinking. Oh my God, she has cancer and she's going to tell them. I was like, I don't think I can do it. And then it was like, I'm pregnant. I was like, oh, well, that's the opposite.
There's two types of girlies in the world. One who hears can't drink and thinks cancer, and one who thinks can't drink and thinks pregnancy.
No tattoo. I was like, oh, chemo treatment, man.
I'm with Catherine. I just kind of assumed that she was, like, feeling a little overwhelmed by, like, Sabrina and just kind of didn't want to have a week with her yet. But I'm glad they sorted it out.
Yeah. I felt like it was a little weird that, like, they had to apologize to Sabrina. I was like, but what for?
I don't know. I totally have a friend who has, like, yep, that's Sabrina. And I understand. Sometimes those people just, you gotta approach different people different ways.
Yeah. And I did still feel for Sabrina in the sense that, like, she was, like, a complicated person. And, like, I felt like her intentions were genuine, even if her actions I did not agree with. And, like,
right. That was her family. She was trying to keep them together.
Yeah. Like, this probably felt like triggering of the emotions of, like, her parents' divorce and her family falling apart. You know, like, she had all this trauma. Again, I'm not excusing it. Like, you are responsible for your own healing and the way you treat others always. But I did still feel like she was, like, a sympathetic enough character.
Right. Like, Wynn and Harriet, you understand how they got to the point they're at. It's the same with Sabrina. You understand how this happens, even if it annoys the shit out of you.
Right. Is it frustrating, though? Yes.
Speaking of Wynn and Harriet, what do you think of their little jumping back and forth between the past and the present and their relationship and how both the past and present were very up and down?
I felt very half in, half out of the relationship the entire book. On one hand, I think that like the love that they had for each other was very genuine, and I thought that it was really beautiful in a sense. On the other hand, I feel like there was always some dysfunction in their relationship where Wynn was really unhappy and didn't know how to handle it. And then Harriet ends up like doubting her whole like life's goal, life's purpose, and ends up moving back to Montana to be with him. And I think they both grew a lot in the book, but I still don't know that I fully back their relationship. I still feel like there may be still people who like could do some figuring it out like on their own.
I found myself hoping that they'd understand they've grown and changed in their time apart. And I still wanted her to like quit and move, but I thought she was going to move to Maine and just kind of like do her thing.
That's exactly
in her happy place. And then she moved with him, and I wasn't mad about it, but I was like, I feel like they have a lot to work through still. And his mother is not doing well, and that's going to add more trauma to their relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was like, glad it was like a little happy ending, and understood they were like, they got to go to therapy and stuff. That kind of was like the very adult ending to this book would be, you see he's overcome his trauma and you need to work through yours and move to your happy place.
Yeah, I 1000% agree.
No, I totally agree. I almost wish that the book had like almost a second ending where like it ended with her moving to Maine, happy place. Maybe you do like 5 years later kind of thing. And mm-hmm. they've both worked through their trauma. His mother may or may not have passed away, which sucks, but like that's normally what happens in those kind of plot devices. And then they either move to Maine or move somewhere else where they feel happy together because they're grown up and they figured out their lives and what they want. Like, I totally supportive of her pottery business despite some misgivings about
here's the answer to your earlier thing about the financial decisions. Sugar Daddy Wynn's about to pay off her loans with his big old tables.
Even tables are not going to make enough to pay off doctor school.
Apparently people are paying $15,000 for a table if you take a picture of it in the woods, so
yeah. But this doesn't include goods and services, like the good itself. Like, he doesn't get straight up 15K. He gets like a portion of it after, you know, paying
you don't
for
know
all
that.
The services.
Anyway, Sugar Daddy Wynn's got taken care of.
Still, that's not enough to pay off medical school, but sure.
Also, his parents are about to die and leave him all their stuff.
Stop. They're poor.
Too soon. Sorry.
But yeah, I think this book actually could have been 4 stars for me if she took some time to herself before they returned to the relationship. I just didn't fully support
you didn't them. Think those 15 minutes in the airport was enough time to herself?
No, I think they could have still had the airport scene, but they come back with, maybe in the future we can be together, where it leaves the door open, but not like, I'm just going to move to Montana with you.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
She's now doing the same thing he did for her in their relationship.
Exactly.
Because of it. I'm like, why are we making the same mistake again?
The overachiever I was raised to be, like she was. But if I got all the way into medical school in my residency, like got through medical school, college, medical school, in my residency, and realized I hated my job, I'd be like, oh, too late now, buddy.
Yeah, no, I would have stayed.
I would have made myself miserable. Yeah. Like, on one hand, I get it. But on the other hand, again, as like a realistic, high achieving person, I'm like, maybe surgery's not for you. Do you have to quit the entire doctor thing that you've worked so hard for just because you've decided you don't want to be a brain surgeon? Like, there are other kinds of doctors in the world.
Maybe another hospital would be lovely after your residency or something.
Go on to another hospital. You could just be like a pediatric doctor where you just like see kids whenever they have the sniffles.
Right.
But I do have a friend who I have recently met with who has been the same way about nursing. It was like her destiny. She was ready for it. And now she's kind of like, I don't know if I like this. And I see she's trying to figure out her next steps. And I'm like, yeah, that's tough. So I realistically don't know what to tell her to do and wouldn't actually know what to do in that scenario.
But I feel like your degree is still applicable to certain things, especially with a medical degree or a nurse's. Like, there are still applicable things that you can go into. dropping everything with student loans still to pay for and go to pottery.
I don't think long term that'll be her like thing.
That's where the book leaves off, as she's going to be a potter.
No, it was just kind of like she's figuring it out and doing pottery while she figures it out.
Yeah, I guess. Just be a surgeon. You'll pay off your loans in 3 years. You can quit and travel the world. Like, just stop.
Stick it out, man.
We're all too realistic, though, so.
Yeah. But I guess it happens. So moving on, the parental relationships and the family dynamics of all the characters are a big part of the story. They're a big part of the friendships and how they relate to each other. They're also a big part of like Harry and Wynn's psyches, their choices, and those things end up impacting their romantic relationship. How did you feel about the family dynamics in the book?
This was the part I loved, where I loved that it was so many different parental relationships, because it was like the trauma and family trauma made it harder for you to have healthy relationships going forward. And they all ended up in healthy relationships, but they were having unhealthy moments where they were fighting for reasons that didn't make sense, or they were afraid of commitment because their dad's on wife number 6 or 7. So I love that for Sabrina, and it made her a more complicated and more likable character, because you're like, well, okay, yeah, your dad's getting rid of your favorite place, your cottage, because wife number 6 thinks it reminds him too much of wife number 1. That's not great. I understand why you may be marriage like no, not for me. I also really loved the relationship between Harriet and her parents, and how her parents got knocked up young, decided to marry. They quit their like dream jobs so they could sustain a family, and then moved to Indiana, which why would you want to live in Indiana? And then they were in an unhappy marriage that they continue to be in an unhappy marriage. And that's why Harriet was so conflict avoidant, because she always just saw her parents fighting, and there was no conclusion to those fights because they just stayed together. They didn't get a divorce. They just stayed together. And that's why she wants to avoid all these conflicts in her friendships and in her relationships. And that's what causes her to have this breakup with Wynn, is because they weren't talking about real shit, because that's the stuff that always led to her parents fighting. And so I thought that was so deep and so interesting. And that's what gives the book really big props for me.
And I think also, not even just how watching parents' relationships affect them, like Harry feeling like she owed her parents because they gave up so much for her. I think there comes a point in every child's life where like realize how grateful you are for your parents and you want to do good for them, you know, or because of them. Not necessarily to that extent, but like that influenced her motivations quite a bit, was feeling like they gave up a lot so she could have this dream. She needed to stick to it. And also how seeing the difference between her parents and Wynn's parents made her think like, maybe I don't belong with this bright, shiny Montana family who loves each other and all like cuddles and does all this really like cheery family stuff. It made her doubt her belonging. And so I think it added a lot of different complexities that were really well fleshed out.
I agree. It definitely felt like, I think it was a real achievement to have these sort of realistic pasts that informed the present in also really realistic ways. And that all of their sort of conflict resolution skills match their upbringing. And that all the characters had stuff that they really needed to work on and that they did end up working on. And that was really good.
Okay, well, we've kind of already touched on the ending and how we weren't necessarily fans, but we still liked the like friendship undertones and the mature descriptions of how hard it is to grow up. But let's talk about the other aspect of a romance book before we wrap up. Was this book steamy enough for a romance book?
No, absolutely fucking not. there's a reason why I included this question, because there's barely any steaminess to this book, like barely. And I read romance books for some smut. Like, I'll say it outright. And Emily Henry, I know, can do smut because I've read Book Lovers. And that's what I was mentioning earlier on. It's like, I've read Book Lovers. There's smut in that. Well-written smut. And not overpowering and still has deep characters. Okay.
I would say the win for this one is the sexual tension. The wanting but not being able to have, but having this, like, muscle memory of this person. And then, like, acting on the muscle memory, but pretending it's not for real, but it being... I liked the tension, and I liked when the tension finally snapped and they got in the freaking shower together.
Yeah. Okay, so I think it's almost a mistake to build this book as a romance. I know it technically is, but also to me, a romance is the process of falling in love with someone. And in this book, the characters are already in love. They've already had an 8-year relationship. So, like, in that sense, I just don't feel that it's a romance book, because it's not about the beginnings of a relationship. It's about how do you fix communication and deep rifts and adult problems that become a part of your existing relationship, which I know is technically still romance, but I think it's a different kind of book. So for me,
I think we should normalize romantic relationships being messy and complicated, especially when they're that far along. Like, no marriage is perfect. No dating relationship's perfect. And I think just because you've been married for 20 years doesn't mean it's not a romance anymore.
I just mean, like, you don't have the same expectations of a falling in love romance. It's a different kind of story. And so I say that to say this book was steamy enough for me. I did not really need more steam, because I felt like actually the sexual tension and the steamy scenes really, really stressed me out, because I was like, this is someone who you're not sure you can be with. How will you feel about this later? Like, are you walking yourself into more heartbreak? Like, I found it really stressful. And if it had been steamier, I'm not sure I could have handled it.
Yeah. I'll clarify then my statements, because I totally agree with that, because I was uncomfortable with the sexual attention, because I was just like, y'all, figure your shit out before like having these thoughts. And so I had problems with that. Basically, I just thought that I knew it was fake dating and I knew it was like a second chance romance. But if you're going to build something as a romance book, I was expecting a little more steam.
I think that's fair.
And like, okay, because one of my least favorite movies, and people like this movie, it's like The Last 5 Years. It has Anna Kendrick. They're singing. It's a musical. And it's about a relationship's beginning and end. I was just uncomfortable during those kind of things. And I've always been super uncomfortable with like endings of relationships and just ending on sadness or ending on like second chance romance or stuff like that. Like, it's just something like I get very easily uncomfortable secondhand embarrassment. So it makes
life
it hard.
And romance are uncomfortable and relationships
I recognize that. And I totally agree with that. But I go to books to escape life.
I feel like I'm normally the same way, but I overall enjoyed this one because it was so close to real life, like developments and problems and how little things become big things and friendships become hard and family trauma can mess up the rest of your life and blah, blah, blah. So I thought it was lighthearted enough with some of the like quippy things the character said to keep me interested, but like still kind of like got me in the heart.
Yes. This book was certainly not about the steam.
Except in the shower.
But
anyway, would you guys like to talk about book recommendations?
Let me find something to recommend.
I mean, throughout this episode, I've recommended Book Lovers multiple times. So I guess I kind of have to end it with Book Lovers. Yeah. That and Spanish Love Deception is a good one. I like some romance novels, but it's mostly enemies to lovers. So
I don't read a lot of romance novels. I really liked Love on the Brain, so that's a good romance novel. Doesn't quite punch you as hard in the feels, and there's a little bit more steam. So go back and listen to our episode on that, I guess.
Yeah, I really don't listen to like lighthearted romance or read lighthearted romances. I feel like I only read like really intense books or books where romance is a secondary plot. The book I'm going to recommend is The Song of Achilles. I just finished it recently. It's been out for a while, by Madeline Miller, who's like very successful and well-known and wrote Circe. And it is just such a beautiful love story. That's the best one I can give you.
Okay. Valid recommendations. And like we always say, these are our opinions. You don't have to agree with them. Like we've said before, send us more romance recs, because apparently we only read like fantasy romance. romanticy, I believe, is the new word for it. Yeah. Every once in a while, we need a break, though. Something a little more lighthearted. So let us know. Catherine, would you like to make a little note to our listeners?
Yes, I'm very excited about this. So we have a little housekeeping note. We have a new feature on our website. It's busygirlspod.com, if you're not aware. So one of our favorite parts of the episode that we just did right now is giving y'all book recommendations based on the episode and based on the books we've already read. So we decided to make a special section on our website that has culminated all of the ones that we've done so far and put it together and put it on our website. It's something that I've been working on for a week now, and I'm very excited that it's launched. So if you go to our website, busygirlspod.com, and click on the book recommendations tab, you will find those recommendations based on the books we've reviewed. And it's broken down by genre as well. So you can click on the different genres based off of what you're feeling and see our recommendations. And we'll update it each week as episodes drop. So you can check back in as more episodes come about. We have a lot of fantasy recommendations. So that's a very, very deep page. But we're hoping to add.
It's a lot of the same ones.
There's some different ones. there's like 9 books on there. So it's our very much a popular genre for us, but we're adding to romance this week. So be sure to check it out at busygirlspod.com.
Y'all, Catherine went back and listened to the end of every episode to recall our recommendations and built out this and even added photos for every book. So please go look at it, because she worked her butt off on it and it's awesome. And I got to remember some book recs that the other two have said that I forgot about them. Like, oh yeah, I should read that one. Yeah. Like I have the time, but.
So you guys go look at it. It looks amazing. Then send us your book recommendations so we can read them. And rate and review our podcast, please.
And I would like to make one other little announcement. Next week's episode that we will be bringing to you, we will be celebrating our 1-year anniversary of the Busy Girls Book Club podcast. And we're not going to talk about a specific book, but we have some really fun stuff in store and maybe some announcements on new things coming up. And hopefully the full next year we're going to do this. And so, guys, we're really excited. We thought being busy girls, this was just going to be a sporadic thing. And we have done an episode every week for a year. So we're really excited and hope you tune in for our 1-year celebration and interact with us on social media around that time.
Yeah. We've stayed connected and kept this podcast going while I was in Europe for a month, while Catherine and Caitlin were in Patagonia for 2 weeks, despite a 3-hour time difference between me and Catherine. Like,
They're both about to make cross country moves again.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going.
Do not have the jobs we had when we started the podcast.
And it was the only stable one.
To be fair, mine was brand new when we started it.
Yeah. Well, so was mine.
Well, so was mine.
All right. 1 year in, I last one standing. But
yeah. So we really enjoyed it. So tune into that episode.
Yeah. I'm a Casey. Little behind the scenes, which is crazy. We were discussing how many episodes per like time period we were going to release. And we were like, oh yeah, maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks. And we've managed to keep up once a week. So that's crazy to me.
Yeah. Like the premise of Busy Girls was that we had an excuse if we couldn't do an episode 1 week because we're busy girls. But we love y'all too much. And we did them every week for you.
Yeah, it's been so fun. All right. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.